Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 318 of Roguecast occurs January 5th, 2021. Another codpiece must go.
I don't know if you guys know this, but it's all Road Warrior outside, because Road Warrior takes place in 2021.
That's what all the memes have told me.
Yeah.
But Randy, you and I researched this.
It's not true. It's never been true.
Yeah. They're usually just alternate versions of their time period, or it's so nebulous that there's only vague knowledge of it.
Yeah, this notion that Road Warrior takes place in 2021, therefore we all have to dress like the Humongous, is not true. And let me tell you, nobody was more embarrassed to learn this than me on January 2nd when I showed up dressed as the Humongous, and Dave was like, nah, man, it's bullshit.
The leather codpiece must go.
The leather codpiece must go. Anyway, welcome to the first Roguecast of 2021.
It was so startling it made Nick cough his iced coffee.
Yeah, I don't know. We have a ton of stuff to cover. In theory, if we get to the time, we are going to talk about this week's comics. We're going to do... Nick and Anna and I are going to do our best of comics for 2020.
Right.
We are going to talk about possibly Cobra Kai Season 3. Maybe Wonder Woman, Soul... couple other movies. Depends on how things. Much time we have.
The one thing that we don't have a lot of this week is news from the comics industry,
right.
Or game industry and stuff like that. So that much at least we can just kind of slide off the plate. There's really nothing major. Or is there anything at all?
No, nothing to talk about so much. So instead, Dave and I want to talk about the 31 characters thing we're doing this month.
Oh, yeah. This is normally the kind of thing we do at the end of the podcast, but I'm down for it right now. It's a game-related thing. It's an RPG-related thing.
Correct.
It was a meme that challenge that went around I think as far back as November, but the idea was to either do it in December or January to kind of celebrate the new year by making an RPG, new RPG character each day of the month, 31 characters in 31 days, you know, like a D&D character one day, and you could do one from Legend of the Five Rings, Star Wars, whatever you want.
Actually, indie games. That was our interpretation. I think in general it was like a... make 31 characters. You can make 31 D&D characters if you want.
That's true.
So
that's true.
So I have to ask, have both of you made 5 characters?
No.
Yes.
Yes, Randy has. You know, Randy's a schedule man. I'm not a schedule man.
Actually, technically speaking...
you've probably made like 10 characters.
I've made 10 characters. Yeah. Because that's how scheduling works. I'm well ahead of myself. Because if I have a day where I don't feel like being a character, I've already done the work.
Dave is like me. I couldn't do this challenge because I'd get through like half the thing and stop, and then I'd have to do like 20 characters on the last
day. This is... for me, I need this kind of stuff. I'm doing another one where I'm doing 365 things in the year.
Nah.
Every day I'm posting about a comic, a graphic novel, or a TV show.
See, I don't know where you're finding time other than that you cheated and started early.
That's the thing. You've got to prep because... if I don't have this project to keep me occupied,
yeah,
I spiral into the depression of how terrible the world is.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
this is my coping mechanism.
That's handy. Yeah, what I am finding is that a lot of these are like, you know, I actually have to go and read up on the system to at least have some basic idea of what I'm doing when I'm building the character. And so that's some extra time. Then there's whatever creative thought goes into the kind of the concept behind the character and then the mechanics of building it. But that said, it's been a lot of fun. And yesterday I was close to being done and just didn't quite finish. I'd have 4 under my belt with a 5th to do tonight. But last night I got behind.
Okay, so of the 4 that you've created and posted,
yeah,
or almost posted, because
yeah,
you've got 3.5, of your 5 that you've posted,
yep,
what's your favorite so far?
Oh, man. I actually like the 3 that I made, the first 3 that I started, which is a Deadlands triptych.
Ah.
Right, so for people who don't know, Deadlands is at its core, it's best known for the horror western game.
It's the Weird West.
Yeah, it's the Weird West with magic and stuff like that. But they would go on to publish 2 follow-up games called Deadlands Noir.
Deadlands Noir and Hell on Earth.
And this, Deadlands Noir was like the 20s or
30s. 1920s, I think it is. It's in New Orleans.
Like a continuation of the history of that setting.
Yep, yep.
And then like an apocalyptic one.
And this is the system that uses the 52 cards, right?
Yeah, you use cards and that kind of stuff. And the Hell on Earth is basically their Rogue Warrior wasteland kind of thing.
Yep.
So yeah, I built a character who, just by dint of the disadvantage he had these weird dreams, and I'm like, oh, I decided his dreams were a curse from his Haitian grandmother, like that she had fought a spirit that cursed the family. So he has these dreams of an apocalypse that's coming. So in 2081 in the Deadlands universe, Ghost Rock nukes basically drop and destroy the world. And Ghost Rock is their weird fuel that's based. It's based on souls and hell. And
oh, interesting.
Like. So basically, this demon cursed his family to always have these awful dreams, and that just came out because there was a disadvantage called like bad dreams or something like that. So I took that, and I was like, oh, okay, well, that, and then so that became the through line. Like the character in the noir also has those dreams, and then the character of the future doesn't have the dreams because she lived through it. But now she is like cursed to be easy. It's easier for her to die because of the curse of the creature.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah. So I did an original character who's like a huckster, which is a card slinging magician. And then in the '20s, it is a guy who is a writer who's like the grand nephew of this guy, and then the great 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 granddaughter of this guy in the '20s is my future. Like librarian driving her pickup truck around gathering forbidden knowledge person.
I like it. Dave?
You know, it's weird. They've all been different and have all had some sort of different pleasure for me. but I am going like more a little bit more indie game, although like Deadlands is off the beaten path, at least from D&D.
I think all might have been indie games so far.
So just real quick, the first one I did was for a game called Western City, which is like an indie Old West game.
Oh, I see you got to out-indie my Old West. I get it.
It was definitely indier than yours. It's so indie that there's like typos in it. That's how indie it is. And I couldn't find a character sheet online because nobody publishes it anymore.
Is this a pamphlet RPG?
No, it was bound and stuff like that too. It was actually created as part of like a contest at one of those like Gen Cons or something when they sometimes do it. You have 24 hours to create a game, but then they would refine it and they published it. But then the next one I did was, I think, for the One Ring RPG, the Lord of the Rings one, and I had a lot of fun with that. I think actually my favorite, though, because what I get out of these is sometimes, in this case it was sort of the weird world building, for the Warren, which actually has a system I'm not super into, it's the Apocalypse World system. And the Warren is the Rabbit RPG in the style of Watership Down,
yep.
Kind of a tough survivalist thing for rabbits. But I made an Arctic hare just on a sort of a whim. But by the way, technically they're not rabbits. They are a separate species of legomorphs, the broader umbrella that pikas and rabbits fall under. But
I'm learning new things today.
Yeah. Arctic hares
hop. And phylum of
they hop with their back feet more like kangaroos than like rabbits. But anyway, they're hardy things and. I sort of had to, because Watership Down has, like, a mythology and sort of legend behind it, I was trying to think, well, in those Arctic wastelands where it's, like, really just, like, snow everywhere because these rabbits live in, like, the tundra.
Yeah.
Like, what do they, what sort of adventures could I conceive of? What are the geographic, markers that I could come up with?
Is it a tundra commando?
No, he is a little bit of, as rabbits go, he's fast and kind of bonkers and sort of will sort of do anything on a whim. But the predators out there are super dangerous. There's Arctic wolves, Arctic owls, polar bears, all sorts of really awful things that are chasing them. And I did read up enough on them to find out that they live on not just icy tundra, but there's like scrub brush forests and rocky sort of mountainsides that they're not white all year long. They turn bluish gray in the summer.
Coca-Cola commercials have led me to believe that polar bears are just nice. Is that wrong?
That is wrong. Okay. Yes.
Only if they drink Coca-Cola. Here's the thing. There are two kinds of polar bears. There's the Coca-Cola polar bears that drink Coca-Cola and they're nice. And then there's the cocaine-fueled killing monsters that are in Dave's game.
That's the one that got Leonardo DiCaprio in that movie.
So that's what snow is. Understand.
So for me, the fun in this one was actually coming up with a little bit of mythology and lore around my rabbit, Barkchu, is his name. Because that is one of those things, they eat bark, among other, because they're tough.
Yeah.
These are hardy little ones. I actually envision them as... Oh, and here's the other thing. While most rabbits live in, like, little warrens very socially, Arctic hares live mostly individually, but they will cluster together sometimes in dozens or hundreds just because it's so freaking cold.
They're isolationists.
So I pictured them as, like, road warrior-style rugged individualists who are, like, these little tough bastards.
And they all have Aussie accents.
But every once in a while, just as happens with Mad Max, you got to go to, like, some fortress, you got to have some missions, you got to work together.
Like, I can drive that rabbit tanker.
That is actually not super far from how I was envisioning if I were to play this character. Anyway, and I'm working on a Prince Valiant character and a character for the horror RPG Dread. Dread is done with a questionnaire format.
Yeah, that one's a lot of fun.
And I was talking about it with Anna, and she wanted to do one. And so I was like, oh, well, I could write questions for my own character, or I could write questions for your character, and you could write questions for mine, which That's cool. We did. And she came up with some great questions, so I'm looking forward to posting that.
That's interesting. Do you have notions for like which systems you're gonna do characters for beyond that, or?
Yeah, I mean, like, I have tons and tons, like Legend of the Five Rings. I got the starter kit, and I do have the actual main current game. So I've been going through a samurai thing recently. So that's just one of them.
I've been going through a samurai thing recently.
You know,
Dave. I just picture you in a room with like 10 guys in full samurai armor, and you're like, "Hi, I'm Dave. I'm a samurai." And like, "Hello, Dave."
I actually meant I've been dating a samurai.
Oh, okay.
We're socially distancing, so don't get critical.
Yeah, no.
I'm just trying to think of a handful of the others because I was able to, like, there's a ton of indie games, but there's, like, Ryutama, that Miyazaki meets Trail one.
I challenged you to do one from the Die RPG, but I don't know if you'll actually do that.
Nope. I'm not going to do no Kieran Gillen Vampire the Masquerade wannabe D&D game.
I'm just saying, I thought it might be a fun exercise.
No, we'll see, because mine is actually, it's changing sometimes based on, like, what I can get done and what I have time for. John Wick, the game designer, not the killer.
You don't know that.
He has a game called Houses of the Blooded that actually got me following him on Facebook because his gaming philosophy, this when he writes about it sometimes, the old stuff from him I hated, but the newer stuff I actually find really interesting as conceptually. Houses of the Blooded is this kind of very Game of Thrones tragic fantasy era of like, you're like aristocratic, like Game of Thronesy killers in it, but you also like play their retinue of like servants and like warrior captains and stuff like that. So when you create the character, you actually create the household too, and you will alternately play these characters throughout the game. But it actually, you do kind of need to read the history on it before you create a character in it.
Everybody's story ends badly.
That is absolutely true. And it's actually like tragedy is woven into it. And they love all this kind of like tragic opera, bloody operas and stuff like that. But I cannot knock out a character for that like real quick in one night. I have to do my reading on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are just a few of the ones. Randy, what do you have planned along the lines? Like, I'm going to do a D&D character too.
So, by the way, we should figure out a way, because Anna's doing this too. We should find a way to put this on the store stuff at some point. Like maybe
so.
Store website or something.
I was turning it over in my head. I'm like, is it all store safe? And it is.
Maybe we can figure something out. But so the next one I'm doing is for the Marvel Advanced RPG. The old phase rep, as they say.
Yeah, yeah. A famous superhero RPG. One of the most loved systems.
From the 80s. So that's my character that's going up tomorrow. And then I've got a bunch of stuff.
Can we get a quick preview? Is he a street hero or a cosmic hero or somewhere in between?
He's a failed super soldier.
Oh.
And it came about because it's random rolls. So I had to like work with him. I have not done a random roll character and I don't remember how long.
That's kind of exciting.
So that was interesting. And it was a character. I don't know if you found this, Dave. I tend to build, as I build a bunch of characters, I start to see the patterns in how I build characters. And I noticed that I tend to build smart characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like all my characters tend to have intelligence high. And
I think part of it is I know because I haven't gamed with you a lot. I know that you're a social gamer and you're kind of like you'll be very talkative in a session.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that when you're playing like a dumb lump.
And I discovered that recently in my most recent D&D game. I'm playing a monk who is like supposed to be sort of this stoic warrior monk.
I
couldn't do it. I can't.
Yeah.
Someone else has to be like the gregarious leader in the party, and nobody was doing it. And I'm like, man, I've got to. I changed him up to be more of a hold my beer kind of monk. He's kind of a swaggery. He has his, because I couldn't do the stoic thing. I could do it for a couple sessions, but it drove me crazy.
Right. You'd have to have somebody in there to sort of play off of if you were doing it, who was kind of doing more of the take the reins.
So you roll your stats in this one, and I happen to roll for his reason feeble, which is the lowest possible ranking.
Right.
So I was like, how do I do that? And I found a way to do it, and if you follow me on Facebook, you'll see what the ideas are.
Oh, interesting.
But I had to work that. So it's a very different character than I would have built if I was just building a Marvel character.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to do a full party of five characters for Masks, the superhero game where you play teenagers.
You're not going to consider that one character, are you?
No, I'm doing 5 days.
Okay.
I've got a couple like that, so I could build a party that I can actually be like
building characters and masks is kind of fun. Although that uses Apocalypse World too.
Yep.
And I found it a little bit hard to post about some of those because like the moves as they have it that you have are these kind of verbose things you can do.
Yep.
But it's not impossible. It's just a little bit odder to post about.
In my write-ups, I've generally been interpreting the rules as like this is what they can do.
Right.
So, I've kickstarted a bunch of stuff that I'll probably never play, but
it makes good fodder for.
I've got one called Supers and Sorceries. It's a 5th edition superhero fantasy game. D&D.
Is it set in fantasy times with superhero powers? Not like vice versa.
Right. Thirsty Sword Lesbians, which is coming out later this year.
Oh yeah, that is literally the name of it, right?
I've got the preview copy of that. I'm going to do a Pathfinder D&D. I mean, an Eberron character, set of Eberron characters, Theros character, Pathfinder character, Cyberpunk for sure.
Yep.
I've got a new Cyberpunk 5th edition game that just got kickstarted called Carbon 2085. I've got another 5th edition game that is like a biofusion thing called Gene Funk 2090.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to make characters from all of this stuff. And I'm like, basically what I'm doing is I'm going forward into the future as I build characters, and I'm closing out with a party of 5 Starfinder characters.
Oh, nice. So, Randy, let me tell you my weirdest one.
Okay.
Well, maybe not weirdest, but it's both nostalgic.
Yep.
Because it was maybe sort of the first character that I really felt like I created myself, and it's very 80s. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness role-playing game. I'm actually planning to finish out with that one. You roll on random tables to, like 1 to 100 determines what animal you are. So you could be a buzzard, you could be a hamster, you could be an iguana, whatever. And then you from there, you buy points and stuff, and you build up your character, and you determine if you're, like, very mutated, a little mutated. You figure out all the, you know, whether, you know, they usually are kind of, because you've done this one before, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you'll give them martial arts skills or commando training or whatever kind of cool hero thing that would fit in the Ninja Turtle world.
So do you have this game or do you just find it online?
I bought all the original Ninja Turtle stuff. So I also have, like, their After the Bomb one, which is their Road Warrior one, but with, like, mutants that become, they become, the, like, the dominant thing. There's humans still in the world, but mutant animals are, like, everywhere. And there's a super cool Australian one called Mutants Down Under, I think.
Yeah.
But that's also apocalyptic.
Actually, Dave, I believe it's called Mutants Down Under.
You can say that if you like. Anyway, but I'm going to close out with that one for pure nostalgia's sake. It uses the Palladium system, which is arcane beyond words.
Oh, man, yeah.
But I am sure it will... I will imagine that in my 40s, I will understand, at least have a better grasp of making it work than I did when I was, like, 12 or
right.
like 10. anyway, but it's been a lot of fun so far.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it, too.
I think everybody should try it.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we're coming back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, December 6th, and also a couple things from last year, because we didn't have a chance in all the holiday craziness to do
the last week of last year,
It was a smaller week, but there are a couple things we wanted to mention.
Yep. And this week had some notable launches, so it's pretty big.
I haven't seen more number one since DC last relaunched.
Well, also, because of the variant covers for Eternals, our shelf has like 40 number ones from Eternals alone.
Yes, it does. So real quick from last week, I want to mention, and this is shocking, a DC book.
Randy with his DC horror again.
Batman Annual number 5 is The Origin of Clown Hunter. None of this sounds like thing would be interesting, but...
Randy's new favorite character.
Because James Tynion has been...
He's been cooking on indie books.
Killing me on Department of Truth. I was like, oh. And then James Stokoe does the art, and I was like, oh, I gotta read this.
Yeah.
And it's a really good story. It is a story... I guess Clown Hunter is like a 17-year-old Korean kid. And it goes in the story of how he got this sort of tragic idea, and they...
Is he a dude who is actually hunting the Joker,
He's hunting the Joker and his minions, basically.
Yeah.
But it's him talking to Leslie Tompkins. And it's really good. It's a good story. It's got fantastic artwork. And it made me think, oh, I should check out Tynion's Batman run.
Yep. And I was reminding you the other day, you did enjoy... Tynion did do that detective run where Batwoman headed up a pretty cool team of...
team, yeah.
Yeah.
I have that in hardcover, actually.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yep, and had some great art on it, too.
Nick, was there something else last week that you were going to mention? Or
no.
Dave, was there something last week? I thought there was one other thing. Is that it?
That's it.
I mean, there are some good Xbox, but yeah, that's just...
But that was about it. Okay.
On behalf of Anna, I'm going to give a shout-out to Ginny Hex.
Oh, right.
The story of Jonah Hex's great-great-great-great-granddaughter who's been in Young Justice and stuff like that.
And she has a special
What is it? Magdalene Visaccio?
Yep.
Wrote a one-shot that sets up her future and also reveals some big things about her backstory and has super nice art from Nick Darrington. That is our little recommended standalone.
Darrington's the cover artist. He's not the interior,
He did the interior.
I believe he's the interior artist.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So they got some good artists for the tail end of the year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, they...
One-shots. They can do... Those artists can handle one-shots.
Nick Darrington did work with Bendis on a story that included her a year or so ago, that serialized one.
Yeah.
It was, like, in Walmart or whatever.
Yeah.
I thought it was a Batman story. Did Ginny Hex in that?
She shows up.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But anyway...
Is Ginny Hex yet another character Bendis has created that somebody else is going to take and make just, like,
probably.
An awesome character?
Makes sense.
Yeah, I think that all the basics are there for it.
All right, so looking at this week, I think the big launch is probably Eternals number one.
Yep, it's vying for that with the Mega Space franchise.
I'm going to preface this that I don't know if I've ever been super excited for an Eternals comic.
I have been actively disinterested in
Eternals.
I mean,
the Neil Gaiman one was okay.
I didn't like that one either.
But it left a lot of people cold.
Right. We've all been, I think, none of us like... We figured that the Marvel movie version will maybe be the closest it comes to grabbing us.
Yep.
But none of us think this is Kirby's coolest creation.
No.
Eternals always felt a little bit like a wannabe, you know,
it may be
New
lesser,
Gods or
it
whatever.
It may be lesser than his boy Commandos. It's really, like, maybe his worst thing he's made.
I've never read the original stuff, so I can't even really comment on that. I just know I've never read any stories with him that have grabbed me. This is all to set up. I think we all like this.
We all like
this. Yeah, we
did. Here's the one note I would say about Eternals. They did birth Thanos.
Yeah.
Now, because Jim Starlin's Thanos came out of... In the MCU, he isn't. But in
the
Marvel Universe, Titan is an Eternals colony.
Yeah.
And he is born from one of the Eternals.
Exactly.
This one is... I think the notable thing about this is that it's written by Kieran Gillen, who did Wicked and the Divine, and knows something about writing about godlike characters.
Yep.
Yep.
And also, Asad Rubik does the art and is really, really good.
It's top-notch.
When was the last time we saw Rubik? He did something after Loki, I know, but Loki's the one that always
stays
in my brain.
He's been doing covers.
Yeah.
And
he worked on Thor with Jason Aaron.
I was going to say he must have worked on Jason Aaron's Thor at some point.
Yeah.
So...
Did he do the God Butcher story that kicked it off? Yeah, he's a top-notch artist for, like, sort of fantasy and sci-fi stuff.
So the first thing I would say about this is that you don't need to have ever read an Eternals book.
Right. The handful of things I've read, I've forgotten all of them, and it's fine because it actually begins with a rebirth. Like, there is a suggestion of a cyclical life-death cycle with them.
The reinvention of them as reincarnating, not just immortal, is a really clever bit, and also feels very Kieran Gillen.
And there's a little bit in the way that, you know how when the Doctor reforms in a new body in Doctor Who, how he's a little different every time?
Yep.
They allow for that kind of thing in this, too, so you can kind of connect with them as they exist right now. And also, you know, if you are an old school fan or something like that, and it's like, this isn't quite my version, well, it's okay because it kind of incorporates that into the story.
And I don't want to give away too much about what actually goes on in the story, but I'll say this. I think it's a buddy comedy and a murder mystery.
It's also probably the most interesting I found Icarus ever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's their lead, for sure.
Yeah, although the narrator is somebody else altogether.
Yeah, the narrator is something different. I thought as world building and as character stuff I thought this was a really strong first issue.
Yeah,
it's got them. It touches on their long-standing enemies, the Deviants.
Yeah,
there's at least two Marvel characters that are kind of more traditional Marvel characters that show up to kind of give you some Marvel Universe grounding. I feel like it's if you want to kind of brace, get ready for the movie. We don't know how close this is going to be, but
it could be
closer. Or just want to get in on Marvel's next kind of notable new thing, I think we would all recommend trying it out.
I agree.
Yeah. The other big one, of course, is Star Wars High Republic.
Yep.
This is a big launch. This is like, they're doing novels.
It's part of a bigger push.
And all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, and they're also doing a show
with
High Republic, and that's going to be like the big thing.
And it's a unique time period, right? They've never really filled out this era, right? Because it's supposed to be the Jedi at their height of powers.
Right. Knights of the Old Republic sort of was like the closest thing that came to
it. So this is after Knights of the Old Republic, somewhere in the couple thousand years between then, but before basically things start to collapse and you get to the prequels.
Before the fall of the Jedi, which is the prequels.
Before the dark times.
Yes. And this sort of focuses on a Padawan sort of taking her Jedi test, while also simultaneously the Jedi launching the Starlight Beacon, which is sort of like the Citadel from Mass Effect.
Yeah.
As sort of like this go-between on the Outer Rim to sort of restore order and offer like a beacon of hope.
Right. The Outer Rim is like, even though the much of the sort of, I guess, what central galaxy has kind of been civilized, yeah, the Outer Rim is sort of the wildlands.
So I think that's an interesting locale to sort of ground the story in, as kind of a citadel where a bunch of races and people move through it. There are some people who show up.
Is it a spaceship, though? It's like a
space station.
Okay. Is it in transit, or is it just like, it's going to be like, is it going to be a central hub? Because I haven't
read
the
issue. Yeah, it's a
central
hub. It's like hovering in like a section of space.
But it is this like frontier type land?
Well, I mean, it's a space station. It literally like hovers over like a planet.
Sure, but is it in the Outer Rim?
Yes.
Yes,
it is. But yeah, no, I think it's a cool locale. There's some really interesting stories to tell. And I like the main character. She's neat.
Does it introduce much supporting cast?
Yeah. There's a whole sort of like, the warden of the...
I saw a dude who was... who's that guy? Bosk? Trandoshan?
Yeah, Trandoshan.
I saw Trandoshan in
That's
there.
Actually, like, the main character's master.
Oh, interesting. Yep. Okay. Because yeah, those are... in Star Wars terms, like, especially in the earlier video games when they would just kind of glum onto these things, I was like, that's a bad guy Star Wars man.
Yep.
Yeah. And all of them are bad guys. But I guess we finally get to see one who's not.
Maybe we're going to see a Jedi Hutt?
I want to see a Jedi Gamorrean.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, cool. It'd be like a sumo Jedi.
He should use a vibro axe instead of with his lightsaber.
Yeah. I honestly would be down for it.
Yeah, no, I'm into this.
What else we got this week?
There's a couple indie number ones. Scout's Honor is from Aftershock. This is a post-apocalyptic story in which a Boy Scout-like society is trying to restore order. There's some twists and turns. There's a really interesting lead character. I like the art a lot. I'm not sure who the artist is, but it's got sort of that inky, I don't know what you call it. It's Samney-esque, maybe a little Chris Samney too.
Yeah, and maybe a little bit, oh my gosh, Francesco Francavilla.
Yeah, yeah. But it's really nice art. The writer is David Pappose, who has done that Calvin and Hobbes noir series.
Oh, yeah.
This was fun, and I like the premise, and I thought the execution was really good. There's some good sort of twists and turns in it. I'm curious to see where it goes from there. And then Boom has a book called The Last Witch.
On the art, gorgeous.
It's like, it looks like a Disney property. Like,
it does.
The art is really nice. But it is a...
I assume it's about a last witch.
It's a Celtic sort of adventure story. But
dealing with sort of family things and...
I think it is about a girl who finds out that she has a lineage that connects her to, like, these witches that's going to place her in, I think, something of a Harry Potter-esque... role to face off against the bad stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah. Other than that, there's Crossover number 3, which has some pretty notable stuff.
Yes, it does.
Including a couple characters from outside the Crossover universe. MODOK Head Games number 2, which I know Nick and I both loved.
Yep. It's this one's a little more jokey than the first one.
But it's not so goofy as to be just... Goofy.
Completely, yeah, I completely agree. I'm loving this series by Patton Oswalt, and I forgot the other writer's name. Jason Blum?
Yeah, Jason Blum. I assume he's related to the Blum guys.
Sure.
They're going to be the writers of the MODOK show, which I'm now excited about all of a sudden.
Yep.
I was nervous about this one, to be honest. I thought, even with Patton Oswalt, who I really trust, I thought it was going to be a rough ride. I guess there are some other notable number ones we should cover, and that's all of DC's future state offerings.
Yeah. Like I said, we haven't seen this many number ones from them since the last relaunch, and this isn't really a relaunch, but it's like a glimpse into DC's future.
Yep, we've got the Wonder Woman, who's the child of Zeus and an Amazonian river god.
Yara Flor.
Yep.
Written and drawn by Joelle Jones.
Right, so that same kind of look and coolness from Catwoman.
Yep.
Which she also had been doing for like a couple years. What else? Harley Quinn gets recruited by the Scarecrow and sort of the fascist takeover of Gotham City.
Yeah, but it's also sort of a reverse Joker, because she is sort of in Joker's place, where she's like held like as a major criminal, and now she's sort of helping out a little bit.
Right, they're wanting to get access to her, what do you call it, her kind of profiling skills.
Yeah.
Now, Nick, I think you said your favorite of the ones you read was the next Batman.
Yeah, the next Batman.
Can you say, sort of without saying too much, what the gist of it was?
Yeah, I mean, it just is sort of reintroducing people to a new sort of status quo that people with masks in Gotham are literally shot on sight by a group called the Magistrate. And
it seems a little judgy.
Yeah, but there's like a group of a gang that are all wearing Bane masks that are sort of the new kind of big bads. There's a new character as Batman. There's also people working on the outskirts of Gotham, sort of trying to get people to safety, which I thought was really cool. I thought the artwork was great. It was just all around really good number one.
And by the way, I gather that Death Metal, the DC crossover that just wrapped, more or less kind of set this up conceptually. I don't know quite how it did, and it doesn't really matter. The stories don't rely on you knowing anything from there, but it does seem like this may be, you know, in the same way that Kingdom Come for a while was the touchstone for DC's future, these may become the touchstones for a good while, too.
Well, I think Randy can say I'm wrong or not, but many of the creators who are working on these Future State books are going to be the new writers for the books. So we're getting a sort of taste of the flavor that they're going to bring.
Right, and if they wanted to thread some of the setup for that into their current stuff, they could.
And then there's a Swamp Thing book with, I forget who's writing it, but the art...
Ram V.
And the art is by Mike Perkins, and it's gorgeous.
And that's really the regular creative team.
Mike Perkins is super good. By the way, I don't know anything about it, but I assume it's Swamp Thing on a Tron light cycle.
Sure.
Because it's the future.
It looks very dark and kind of horror.
He's taking over the world in the name of plants or something.
Yeah, something along those lines. And then there's The Flash. Again, I'm blanking on the creative team on this, but it's sort of Flash doesn't have the Speed Force anymore. He's utilizing hardware from all of his various villains, and all the Speed characters are together. So that includes Bart Allen.
What do you mean together? They're a team?
Yeah, they're sort of working together.
They're one big lump of meat.
No, they're not one big lump
not
of meat.
Not style.
Although Flash
in comics, I've seen it happen.
Yeah. Sure, we're not opposed to anything.
Flash Force turn into meat lump.
But since none of them have access to the Speed Force anymore, and so they're
That's
all sort of working
idea.
As a team.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what it is that made the Speed Force go away.
Yeah.
Was it Swamp Thing's light cycle? I don't know.
It's possible. Anything is possible.
And then, Dave, you had The King in Black, Rise of the Valkyrie, or Return of the Valkyries.
Right, I have not read this one yet, but I guess, is this a mini-series, Randy?
It is a mini-series, I believe.
And sort of like the Black Cat series that launched out of it. Well, actually, that's going to be an ongoing?
Yeah, that's a mini-series.
Oh, it's a mini-series, okay.
This one is actually written by Jason Aaron and his Valkyrie writing partner.
Oh, so this is a straight-up follow-up to, kind of continuation of what he'd been doing.
The Black Cat's a good continuation. I think it was a series that Marvel liked that did not get the critical reception or the commercial reception they wanted, but they realized they could relaunch it with The King in Black Banner. And maybe get people to put some eyes on a book that was already doing everything right.
Yeah,
this one is dealing sort of aftermath of the last issue of King in Black, where issue number one, where that character got killed, and this is sort of Valkyrie ushering him off to Valhalla.
Yeah, okay.
And
this Valkyrie looks like the movie, the Valkyrie from Thor Ragnarok.
That character does show up.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. But there was also the classic, Brunhilde...
Jane Foster is the
right.
current Valkyrie.
Got it.
This is apparently the rebirth of the Valkyrie, so I would hope Brunhilde shows up at some point.
She's on the cover.
Yeah.
Or at least one of the covers.
Yeah.
All right. Do we got anything else this week?
I was going to mention Thor and Venom both have an issue this week.
Yep.
It's pretty notable these days when Thor comes out. People are hyped for that, and same writer as Venom, so it's and so much tied together on all of that stuff.
Amazing Spider-Man is sort of a post-mortem on the Last Remain story. Juggernaut wraps this week. New Star Wars, which I've been enjoying that series so far.
That's just regular Star Wars.
Yeah, there's a new character they introduced who is... this is Charles Soule writing, and he's doing the... You remember the Lando series you wrote with him?
And
so he's doing stuff with Lando and Lobot.
Oh, nice.
Sort of following up on some of the stuff that he did, which I kind of like.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Nick, anything else on your stack?
I mean, I'd be remiss to not mention Hellions and X-Factor as their great books. Oh.
Should we quick mention? We should mention the Aliens covers this week.
Oh yeah, well then we're a little light on them, but we do have a reorder coming in. But Marvel's doing Aliens covers for where all their heroes are fighting aliens. So there's a
that is the Xenomorph aliens very specifically.
Yep. Yep.
Because Marvel just recently acquired the rights to them, and they're going to be putting out some Aliens comics.
Yep, starting in March.
But in kind of like in the lead up to it, they're just doing some variant covers showing Miles Morales, Valkyrie, etc., fighting, dealing with aliens.
Yep.
There's an awesome Thor one where he's just crunching one of them.
Yep.
What is it? The Guardians of the Galaxy facing off against an alien queen. These are pretty nice covers.
Yeah.
We're sorry if we do end up selling out. It was hard to judge numbers on these.
Yeah. And we do have more coming in.
We'll see what we can do to get them back.
Also, two trades for me. Firepower Volume 2 comes out, which is the collection of the first six issues of the series, which I think Nick and I have both really been enjoying that one. And then a new omnibus edition of Harrow County, Cullen Bunn's sort of southern gothic horror book.
You know, I've been wanting to get back to that at some point, and this would be the edition to do it with.
I believe previously it was five volumes?
Yeah.
Something like that? Okay, no, it's four volumes in library editions, and it was six volumes total. Or no, sorry, eight volumes total. So I believe this is going to be basically the library editions cut down into softcover. So it'll be four instead of eight trades.
Okay.
And then there was a Marvel hardcover for me, which was Donny Cates' Guardians of the Galaxy run. Yeah. Was in two trades, now just one giant hardcover.
Yep.
Really, really good series. Definitely recommend.
All right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about our best comics for 2020. All right, we have sent Dave off to the Phantom Zone, and Anna has joined us because we are going to do our top 10 of the year.
Yay.
Dave did not have as many big books he liked this year, and also didn't have the love of making lists that no one has the love of making lists.
No,
I do.
But that's on your file card.
Y'all both list making is definitely my primary military specialty. but y'all both came up with your top 10s. We just sort of discussed it before we start recording. What we're going to do is each of us is going to run to our top 10 to 6, and then we'll rotate, and then we're going to run our top 1 through 5.
Yep.
So my list, starting at, and I should preface this by saying I believe my actual top is like 25.
Yeah, I mean.
I had some stuff I had to make that didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
My number 10 is Chew number 1 through 5 from Image Comics. This is John Layman returning to the world of Chew. This was basically... It was Tony's criminal sister, Saffron, who we'd not really met before.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure she was referenced in the first comic or not.
Was she not?
I'm not sure. She might have been, because he has a big family.
Yeah.
But this was basically... Someone pitched it as basically the Better Call Saul to choose Breaking Bad.
Hmm.
And that's about right. It's not necessarily a prequel, although it does start out in the same period. Like, Tony has just gotten his job with the FDA. The chicken plague is just now starting. And Saffron Chu is running sort of a crime thing.
But don't we also see, like, stalwarts like Colby and...
Yep, Colby is his partner.
He
just got partnered up with Colby. So it's a little bit of a side story of Chu, but it's definitely about sort of the criminal side of this universe. And I love a good heisty thing.
Yeah.
I love a good crime story.
A good heisty thing.
They did not, because he's doing Farmhand, they did not get Rob Guillory back on art. But the artist they've got is really good. And this was a good kickoff. I'm looking forward to the second story arc in 2021.
And we get more weird food powers.
And more weird food powers. Number 9 on my list is Savage Avengers, which had a number 0 this year, which reprinted the Cool and Goth story, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
The Cool and Goth X-Men story.
Yeah,
and then
great. The
other story, the rest of it was basically Doctor Strange putting together a team of Savage Avengers to take on Cool and Goth, which included Conan, Wolverine, Punisher, Elektra... And then later on, they added in Black Knight and Juggernaut, and I'm digging it.
Okay, the only one on there that I don't feel like is a killer is Black Knight.
Yep.
So you could just call it Savage Killers and Black Knight.
He's got a bloodthirsty Ebon Blade, so he's a killer.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
I think it's delightful that you love this book as much
as
you do.
It's so fun and weird. Like, Conan in the modern world is so much fun.
I mean, the opening has, like, Wolverine fighting Conan, and come on, that's just
They
fun.
Fight a dragon. They have to go fight a dragon.
Jerry Dugan is writing that, right?
Yes.
Don't they drop Juggernaut on something?
They dropped Juggernaut on a dragon. Also, Magic is in the team.
Of course she is.
So, yeah, it's super fun. The art is really good. I feel like Deodato's done a bunch of it.
It's
really fun. And this is one of those books where I'm like, when they first pitched it, I'm like, this sounds like fun, a fun miniseries. And then it just kept going. And it's still good. And I don't know why, I don't know how, but I'm glad. Number 8 on my list, this is surprising, is Thor. There were 10 issues of Donny Cates' Thor, Donny Cates and Jeff Shaw. Not Jeff Shaw, it's Nick Klein, isn't it? Jeff Shaw does something else.
Yeah, Jeff Shaw was the crossover, yes. This is Nick Klein, yes.
I'm not a huge Thor fan. Like, I didn't love all the Jason Aaron stuff. I didn't even love the JMS, and I have the Simonson stuff, but it's Simonson. I'm not a huge fan of the character, but I've really liked Donny Cates' metal version of Thor, and the Galactus Silver Surfer story opened was really good. And they did a great job with Beta Ray Bill, so I've been really enjoying it. Number 7 on my list, the Marvel Snapshots. These are a series of one-shots that Kurt Busiek is sort of show-running, but he's not writing any of them. This is another one of these things where I'm like, nobody's going to read these. And for the most part, I think it is a hard sell. It is basically, he's doing Astro City in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
It's from the point of view of more regular characters. And so it's like Submariner's girlfriend? Or was that the Human Torch's girlfriend?
I thought it was Human Torch's girlfriend.
Human Torch's girlfriend. Submariner's like, it was somebody in his life. The Civil War one was really good. It's from the point of view of like a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who's like not sure about his whole role in this thing. Captain America, I forget what the role was in that, but it's all these side stories. And then they did the X-Men one that I know Anna really liked.
Yeah, all three of us did, actually.
Yeah, I think everybody in the store liked it.
Yeah.
I don't like Cyclops. I'm a Wolverine person at heart.
How can you not like Cyclops? Cyclops is amazing.
He's a dork. But to explain it better, my like first exposure to the X-Men was like the cartoon the 90s, and Cyclops is like, he's the fun police. That's his only job in that cartoon. He sucks. So not a big fan, but that story, it was great. It made me like Cyclops.
They're doing a hardcover of these, and I'm definitely going to pick it up. I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then number 6 on my list, Deceased had both Unkillables 1-3 and Dead Planet 1-5. Or was it Snows 1-5?
Yeah, 1-5. We haven't seen the finale
not
yet.
Quite finalized. But Unkillables was a side story that looked at like Red Hood and Deathstroke and Orphan and some sort of like the anti-heroes and killers and what they were doing in Deceased. And that was really good.
Yeah. It was. Ugh.
And then Dead Planet is a direct sequel.
Yep.
Which says
set years after the first one.
Yeah, Jonathan Kent is Superman. Who's Wonder Woman? Is it?
I guess it's not Diana because she does die.
It's Wonder Girl.
It's Wonder Girl. Cassie is Wonder Girl, and then it's Damian as Batman.
It's Damian as Batman.
And it's Tom Taylor, and it's great.
Yeah.
And Trevor Harrison on art.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been really good. I hope that there's more Deceased to come after this. I'm sure there will be.
Features John Constantine being an asshole.
It does indeed.
And it also has like a bunch of the weird magic DC people in it too.
Yeah, they brought in a bunch because they're doing a Trigon thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is kind of funny. Like, hey, besides zombies, what if Trigon showed up?
Similarly, Unkillables was on my list before it got knocked down when I saw it was on yours.
Yeah.
But that book is so good. I've recommended it to so many people.
Yeah.
I did not think I was going to like it as much as I did, and I ended up liking it more than I liked the first Deceased.
Yeah, I kind of did too, actually, and I love Deceased.
Yeah, I'm just a sucker for bad guys, like, begrudgingly becoming good guys.
Yeah.
And the, like, sort of, like, Tom Taylor is, like, really good at, like, simultaneously being funny and also heartwarming and at times heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That book made me cry at the front of the store while they were doing the podcast the week that I read the finale of it. So, 10 out of 10 on that one.
Yeah. Nick, your 10 through 6?
All right, so my number 10 is 10 of Swords, which is a 22-part X-Men story that started out being all about various swords and then became drinking games, weddings, and a story all centering around the leader of Avalon, Queen, what's her name?
Saturnine?
Saturnine.
Yeah.
And possibly a love story between Apocalypse and his long-lost wife that lived in another reality. So, you know, it was a bizarre X story that went to places I wasn't expecting and I absolutely loved.
That sounds very complicated.
Have you ever read the Excalibur stuff, the Captain Britain stuff?
I haven't read the Alan Moore, Alan Davis stuff.
I feel like a lot of it was informing X of Swords.
Yeah,
of Swords.
the woman who's writing Excalibur.
Teenie Howard.
Thank you. She is championing a lot of that stuff, yeah. And I have a feeling she has a huge fondness for it, and yeah. Makes me want to read it.
Well, it's hard to find, I think. I don't even think it's in print.
No, I don't think it is. They did an omnibus a long time ago.
I know, I have it.
Maybe I'll just have to kill you and take yours.
That's fair.
Or you could borrow it.
Nope.
Nope. Okay. In true X-Men fashion.
You can only have the omnibus if you defeat me in Mortal Kombat.
All right. Why not?
So my number 9 is Batman 3 Jokers.
That was good.
It was really good. Long delayed, but Geoff Johns, you know, he's got some tics I don't like, but he's a super competent storyteller, mm-hmm. And he created a mystery series that featured David Finch's probably best artwork that I've seen. Or no, it was Jason Fabok's.
Yeah, Jason Fabok's
best art. Yeah, it's gorgeous. Sure. And it was a mystery story involving different variations of Jokers that I thought was really good.
Yeah.
And it had a really good punchline at the end.
Yeah.
Number 8 is Suicide Squad, which I know we all enjoyed.
Yep.
It's Tom Taylor.
So good. It's so good.
Tom Taylor features several times on my best of list because he's an awesome writer. But this take on the Suicide Squad, which basically sees another team get moved into the squad.
Yeah.
And Amanda Waller gets pushed out and a bad person gets pushed in her place,
mm-hmm.
And basically turns the Suicide Squad into
like a clandestine, like, yeah, spec ops team, yeah, on foreign soil.
Which at first I was like, Tom Taylor, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
But somehow over the course of 12 issues,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
over 12 issues, he made those new characters really relatable, and I love them.
Yeah.
While also doing a great job with, of course, Harley Quinn, Deadshot.
Mm-hmm.
There's an issue of Captain Boomerang. It's amazing. There's a few twists and turns.
Yeah. He just announced they're doing, he's doing Nightwing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm super excited.
They have also said, I think somebody said, or someone related, Tom Taylor might have even said, like, that he's like, there's more DC work coming for me.
Yeah.
Now, that probably means more deceased. But I'm kind of hoping that maybe they'll do the Revolutionaries that were the characters that,
yeah,
were in Suicide Squad.
I would love that book.
Yeah.
They were part of the thing that, like, really drew me to that book was how, like, super queer that, like, half of the team was.
Because
they're all basically, like, leftist anarchist.
They're freedom fighters.
Yeah. And they, like, sort of just get, like, press ganged into joining the team. But, like, the biggest thing that I enjoyed about that book is that Tom Taylor is, like, super politically savvy. The book felt like it came out at exactly the right time, where they're talking about all the right topics, and that feels good to read in a book.
Yeah, it does.
He also had Deadshot's daughter have a dog, which,
yes,
I can't remember the dog's name. It's like
Dogshot.
That's right. Which is silly, but I loved it.
It's truly adorable.
Speaking of Tom Taylor, number 7 is Seven Secrets, his creator-owned book about briefcases filled with secrets that you can't know, and the secret society that protects them.
Secret.
And it's very cool.
Yes.
The world building is great. The art is fantastic. I could see this easily being a movie or a TV show.
Yep.
It's just that kind of fun. I'm reading this and Firepower at the same time, and they're good companion pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6, I will continue to state X-Men, and this is the main X-Men book by Jonathan Hickman and various artists. It's just the X-Men book that I wanted. Randomly focusing a lot of different characters, but mainly focusing on, like, the Summer Squad. So it's Cyclops and Cable and Rachel Gray and Jean. So
yeah,
and sort of their romances and family relationships, and Jonathan Hickman even made me like Vulcan, which I didn't think was possible. That I'm calling him Vulcan is a big step over a kid Vulcan.
Yeah.
But it's just been a fun book. And Anna, your...
So, my top 10 actually ended up sharing a lot in common, both of y'all. But for my number 10, I'm going to say Wonder Woman Dead Earth.
Yeah.
Which was the Black Label book that Daniel Warren Johnson did art for and wrote.
Yeah, the sort of post-apocalyptic Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and I love his, like, weird sketchy style and his, like, very metal garage rock type sensibilities with his art. So I'm always, like, pleased to see him do stuff, especially when it's off the beaten path like that.
Yeah, he's doing Beta Ray Bill this year.
Which is exciting.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. My number 9 was the most recent arc of TMNT. I'm not a huge fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
I mean, like, I, of course, like, I think everybody my age had a dozen or so episodes of the cartoon on VHS. but, you know, I never really, the comic never really drew me in until this arc, which featured Sophie Campbell writing and doing art, or was it just...
It was writing and art, yeah.
Yeah. Doing writing and art. And
I feel like she's still writing it, but the artist has changed.
Yes.
If that's the case... It will still probably continue to be excellent, though. There's her art is very charming.
Her art is so good, yeah.
It's so cartoony and, like, I don't know, simultaneously cute, but also, like, not.
It was also, like, it was sort of a post-apocalyptic premise, too. It's like,
yeah.
All of Manhattan had been transformed into animal mutates, and people were trying to deal with it, and the turtles were sort of, the, like, trying to help out.
Yeah. And I don't know, I wonder what could have possibly happened in 2020 to make me so interested in all these post-apocalypse stories. But, you know, weird coincidence, I guess.
Yeah.
My number 8, and I know that this is shocking, but, like, came out, like, basically, like, right at the end of 2020.
Literally last week.
Which was the Ginny Hex one-shot that DC put out. It's being written by one of my favorite writers, Magdalene Visaggio. I think it's charming. I love this character. She's from Dripping Springs, Texas. She's like a fiery little redhead with a shotgun and a truck and a trunk full of weird Jonah Hex loot that includes cosmic artifacts from around the DC universe. It's very fantastic, and the one-shot, it's a oversized issue and contains, like, a lot of neat, I guess, interactions with characters you wouldn't expect, like, a teenage superhero to interact with.
Okay.
And also some weird mystical, not necessarily time-traveling stuff, but, like, an immortal villain and some weird mysticism. And
is it Vandal Savage?
It is not Vandal Savage.
What? There's more than one immortal villain?
Did you not read it, Randy?
No, I assume Bendis wrote it, and it's terrible.
No, Bendis didn't write it.
did it feel like a lead-in? Did it feel like there's going to be a series out of it? Or
no, it actually felt like pretty self-contained, and I wish there would be a series out of it, because I think Ginny Hex is delightful.
Yeah.
And honestly, if they would let Magdalene Visaggio write that, I would be just absolutely stoked about it.
Maybe she will. Maybe it'll be a...
Yeah, maybe. Number 7 on my list was actually a book that I never, ever thought would continue, Heavy Vinyl.
Yeah.
Which I read, like, when I first started working here, because Dave recommended it to me and was like, the whole store pretty much liked this. Yep. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll give it a shot. And I read it, and I was like, this is amazing. When's the rest of it coming out? And Dave was like, never.
And the second one came out only as a graphic novel, right?
It only came out as a graphic novel. It resurrected from the dead.
And remind me the pitch on this. It was sort of, there was a Fight Club element to it?
Yeah, basically it's like bunch of girls who work in a record store.
Right.
I think it's set in the 90s. Mm-hmm. They work in a record store and sort of like teach each other how to fight to defend themselves and like... you know, other younger girls and stuff at, like, concerts and things like that who, like, you know, may have to deal with people being assholes to them.
Okay, yeah.
I think the original name for it was Hi-Fi Fight Club.
That's
which,
right, they had to change it because of the Fight Club thing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a Hi-Fi Fight Club is a little more indicative of what it's about.
Yeah.
But yeah, Heavy Vinyl. So Volume 2 of that came out this year, which was great because I picked it up in quarantine and I had a nice little ray of sunshine in there to read.
That's good.
Yeah. And then number 6, which is Money Shot, which is Tim Seeley and Sarah Beatty's, like, comedy porn comic about staff or a team of horny astronauts who go into space to fuck aliens for science.
Yeah, because you get funding if you're doing porn.
Yeah, and they get their funding because they're doing porn. It's delightful.
It's such a weird concept. The art's gorgeous.
The art is amazing. It's very funny and, like, lots of tongue-in-cheek references to, like, you know, classic sci-fi things like Star Trek and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's also shockingly queer-friendly, which I did not expect.
Yeah.
And similarly, like, really poly-friendly, too, which is awesome, because, like, pretty much everybody in the book is in a relationship with at least one other person at all times.
And one alien.
Yeah, and also probably also having sex with an alien in that issue. But they get themselves into, like, crazy hijinks in the way that, like, the crew of, like, the Enterprise in TOS would, where it's like, haha, we came down to this planet because someone wanted to fuck an alien, I guess, and now we're trapped in cages in a gladiatorial arena. What do we do? And it's delightful.
All right, time to do top fives. My top five, my number five is Immortal Hulk, which has been on my top five since it started. Those issues 29 to 41 and 2 one-shots this year.
Yeah.
They did some stuff this year with the leader. They did some. I really like this year's Immortal Hulk stuff. It continues to be great. Al Ewing is doing just definitive like horror Hulk stuff. And this year was also the Zemnu story.
Yep.
Where they brought back this old Golden Age, Silver Age.
Yeah, like Silver Age.
Alien who they basically, he replaced the Hulk in the minds of people in their memories and stuff.
Yeah.
It was weird, high concept fun stuff.
It was.
Black Cat finished out this year, and I really love Black Cat. And then, surprise, surprise, it came back for number one thanks to King in Black, and it's great. So I'm super happy. This is Jed McKay writing. I've really liked his stuff.
Huh.
Number three, there was a lot of Brubaker and Phillips this year, and those guys are always great. So they did Cruel Summer, which is a collection of their criminal like one-shots.
Yeah.
And then Pulp, which was a... it's not a Western, but it has a Western in it.
Right.
So like it's a story of a writer who writes Westerns, and then there's a crime thing around it. And then they did Reckless, which is their new graphic novel series, which is sort of like the Jack Reacher books a little bit.
Yeah. About a person who solves problems if you're interesting enough, and you know,
if you're interesting enough,
if your story's interesting enough.
And Brubaker, it felt very Brubaker, Mary Sue-ish because it is a guy who like had some counterculture, has some criminal records, lives in an old movie theater.
Yeah,
like this was Brubaker. Like this is what Brubaker really wanted to do.
If it wasn't on your list, it's legit. It's I think my favorite Brubaker thing that he's ever done.
It's really good. It's up there. Yeah. And there's another one coming out later this year.
I know. I'm super excited.
Number two on my list is, I know, on Nick's... five on Nick's list.
Yes.
And that is Department of Truth. Four issues in, and this book is so good.
It is... Yeah, it's great.
It's James Tinian's weird conspiracy book. It's a really interesting hook as to how he does all these conspiracies and ties them in. It gets a little real sometimes, gets a little dark sometimes.
Yeah, there have been some issues, especially 3 and 4, that I was like, holy shit, what did I just read?
And it has this sort of art that I wasn't sure about at first, but I came to love that sort of in that Ashley Wood, Ben Temple Smith kind of vein.
Agreed. I wasn't quite jonesing with it on that first issue, but as it's grown, I have grown with it, and it is very enjoyable.
Number one on my list is one that has been number one on my list for the year, last year or two, I think, and that's Chip Zdarsky's Daredevil. This year was like Hell's Kitchen under siege by these rich, the Bronwyns, I think, or the Stronwyns or something like that. It's a husband and wife who are basically standing for the Koch brothers. They're rich assholes.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to team up with Kingpin and this ex-cop, Detective Cole North, to basically protect Hell's Kitchen. They were trying to gentrify it. In order to do that, they basically unleashed supervillains on it to destroy the businesses that were there.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's
a weird-ass art.
It's
That's amazing.
Such good stuff. And then, because of something that happened, Daredevil winds up having to go to jail, and there's a big twist that happened toward the end of the year about how that's going to... So that leads into this year, which is going to be interesting as well.
Huh.
And Daredevil went to jail, not Matt Murdock.
Not Matt Murdock. He's done that already.
Daredevil.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my number one. Super great. Nick, what is your top five besides Department of Truth?
I was going to say, five is Department of Truth. Again, I think the trade hits in a couple of months. Pick it up. You'll love it.
Mm-hmm.
Number four is Something is Killing the Children, which we've talked about on this podcast, made fun of its title, but it's an amazing book, also written by James Tinian.
Mm-hmm.
Art by, is it Worth or Werther Deladria?
I'm glad you have it in front of you so you can tell who it is.
I can't say it, but it's a... basically about a small town where a bunch of kids die in a horrific, horrific way.
Yep.
And a young girl, think kind of Buffy, kind of shows up in town and says she can help. It's just awesome.
It's got a little bit of that Buffy to it, but a little bit more than that.
Yeah, there's more to it. There's a level of darkness in this that is comparable to the level of darkness in Department of Truth.
Yeah.
But it's just James Tynion flexing another muscle. Mm-hmm. And it's just really, really good. It's two trades out. Go buy them. Mm-hmm. Number three, I think... is Hellions, which all my top books are X books.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
Just deal with it. Hellions is the weird book that is a Mr. Sinister led team with oddball characters you shouldn't like. Nanny, Orphan Maker. It also includes people like Havoc, which I do personally love, and Psylocke. Yeah. But it's dealing with very interesting ideas. It's funny. It's written by Zeb Wells, who's sort of doing kind of a D&D riff with this cadre of people. Mm-hmm. They did a story with Madeline Pryor that I thought was very poignant and kind of had a lot of heart to it because of her relationship with Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two is X Factor, which I know Anna is a big fan of because it's basically the Gwenpool team of Leah Williams and David Baldion coming over and doing an X book, and an X book that is amazing about a group of mutants whose job is to find out if a person has actually died, how they died, so they can be resurrected in the tanks.
Yeah,
that goes to some interesting places. Leah Williams uses like every wart in the X-Men universe. I mean, I'm talking Adam X the Extreme, who is now hosting a TV show on Mojo World, but he's trapped there and can't leave unless he dies.
Okay.
There's just these bonkers ideas, and horrible characters that should never exist in the first place, yet they're given a chance here, and they're made to be in really good stories. I just think it's awesome. And the team's led by Northstar. It's got weird people like Daken and Polaris.
Is Prodigy also in that?
Prodigy is also in that.
From what I recall, when I remember flipping through the first issue, it's one of the few books where I think actually the cast is majority queer characters. I think they're actually like 4 out of 6.
Yeah, the core team is Aurora, Northstar, Prodigy, Daken, Rachel Gray, Polaris, and Eyeboy.
Also, Leah Williams is, and I think I say this every time her name gets brought up, but, like, the Marvel writer who is, with the exception of, like, maybe Jerry Dugan, the most tied into popular culture and good at using it to be funny.
Yeah. But, yeah, exactly. And then David Baldion just really, really does a great job with the art. It's very expressive and animated. And then my number one book is Marauders, because Jerry Dugan, having a Kitty Pryde pirate book, becoming the Red Queen to working with White Queen, or Emma Frost, in their relationship, and her subsequent murder, and the revenge that she takes on said murderer is just, I don't know, it's
a wild ride, and it's very fun, and it, I think, doesn't really follow a lot of the current X-Men sort of, like, themes. It's very much like an adventure book.
Well, yes, but their idea was basically to, on Kitty Pryde's boat, to basically save the people who can't, from other countries who can't get to a gate.
Yeah,
which... basically the mutants that are oppressed, they will get you and bring you to Krakoa, to this wonderful land where you could be free.
Yeah.
That does not always happen, but it's really, really good. I love that they're using a lot of the Hellfire Club stuff in this, and you're getting the inner workings of that and the various political stuff. It's just fun.
Mm-hmm.
Anna?
Yeah, so it wasn't on my list because I knew it was on yours, but Marauders, also one of my favorites, same with Something is Killing the Children. But my number five is going to be Red Sonja and Vampirella, which... seems like an oddball choice for a best comics list, given that it sounds like a weird crossover that shouldn't actually be good. But it is consistently delightful to see sort of like the suave Vampirella interact with the brutish Red Sonja, who just is sort of like slugging her way through all of the problems that they're having. Very charming. I think Jody Ballare is doing art on it, and I can't remember the writer, but I like the writer as well. Real unfortunate that I don't have it sitting in front of me. But my number four is another book that came back from the dead, volume three of Moonstruck, which is like a supernatural, like a queer supernatural romance story about like a werewolf who works in like a little like coffee shop and like her friends. It's very delightful, super funny too, and sort of just like whimsical, exciting hijinks. Number three on my list, another book that I thought was dead for sure, Heathen, volume three came out this year. And Heathen is the sort of lesbian Viking saga about a young Viking woman's quest to murder Odin.
I like it.
Which is great. Yeah. It's great. It's such a fun premise, too.
Yeah.
And truly, like, I was, like, utterly thrilled that those two books and Heavy Vinyl came back this year.
Yep.
And I do sincerely hope that they continue to make more, because they are consistently among my favorite books and also make for great gifts for my partner for Christmas. So please, please continue to come out so I don't have to shop for other things.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Number two on my list, is the book that, like, I'm always stoked for when it comes out and that I almost always wish... would just keep going forever, which is Far Sector.
Yeah.
Which is like sort of a high concept sci-fi Green Lantern story set in like the Outer Rim.
And starring Janelle Monáe.
Basically, yeah. the main character, she has very similar fashion and sort of like hair and stuff. Very cool. And it's written by N.K. Jemisin, the sci-fi writer.
Yeah.
And normally I find that the transition between like prose and comics is like a really rough barrier.
It's tricky.
But she, I think, succeeds in a place where a lot of writers who try and make that jump don't. And it of course helps that the art in the book is beautiful and sort of like shoulders some of the burden of storytelling in the way that comics should. And it's just truly like amazing. I did not think that in 2020 I would have number two on my list be a book about a space cop. But they sort of address that too. It's very like politically savvy in that regard, and sort of like addresses the idea of a, you know, basically a space police officer, and how that is like sort of, how it clashes against the main character's like sort of experience on Earth, and her identity.
And she's going to be in the Justice League Future State stuff.
She is.
Yeah.
And honestly, good. I want her to be the new Green Lantern. That's all I want.
Yeah, I'm hoping we'll see more of that character.
Yeah, she's delightful. And then number one on my list is Adam Glass's Teen Titans.
Yep.
I fucking love this book. It is my favorite book. All of the characters are wonderful. All of the situations are wonderful. Damian is a little shitbird, but I will would let him lead any Teen Titans team that I'm reading about, specifically because he's a little trash monster.
Yeah.
He's just constantly doing dumb shit and dragging everybody else through it. It's great. But yeah, I must have recommended that Teen Titans book to like 40 people this year. It is so good, and I highly recommend that you pick it up if you can.
What are there, three trades of that?
I believe there are four trades.
Four
or
trades.
At the very least, if there aren't four trades, there are about to be.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
That's our top 10 for the year. We will not have time to talk about Cobra Kai and Wonder Woman this week, unfortunately. Hopefully get to it next week. So until next time,
yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.